This is the warm-up here to the Moose Turd Cafe, a program which, you know, airs inconstantly. We had a major illness, so it was like a hospital around here for a month, you know, so, and Mike got sick too, actually. Anyway, we, shifting gears here, and also on the station, we've been pretty much, you know, playing a clock wheel. That's what Sam Broadcasting calls it, and might as well use it because it's really a rotation of material for African American History Month, which is I'm just sort of interpreting as all through this month. But I didn't get started till about halfway through. Anyway, we've been I found a couple hundred hours of John Coltrane music, and I've also found about half that, but a substantial amount of Miles Davis. And we've been playing pretty much, it's been like, you know, a Coltrane for 2 weeks now on that. And then interspersed, there's been a wonderful archive of speeches, remarks, interviews at the University of California at Los Angeles, UCLA, of African-American, leaders in different fields. I mean, in both the upheaval of the 60s and the political and organizing and freedom struggle there. And then also, of course, many of the artists and folks that are have succeeded in other fields. Going all the way back to Langston Hughes. There's great recordings, and so we some of my favorites are really Barack Obama. I think his couple of his are just really strike me, and we also got some, I think, in there some actual stories, narratives coming out of the slave era, and we have, I believe, also the audio version of W.E.B. Du Bois' classic work, The Souls of Black Folk. And if you're not familiar with W.E.B. Du Bois, he's a turn-of-the-century African-American writer, I think he lived all the way through World War II, most of it anyway, I think. I think he did. Anyway, and a towering intellectual, and a great champion and advocate of the freedom movement for African Americans and the Negro people, as was I guess it's hard to take anything official with respect to enslaved and then segregated peoples, other than that, they're denied their humanity, and the names are usually derived from, or lots of times, I don't know about usually, lots of times derived from the names of owners, and everybody wants to back away from that, but it's like a history you can't trace, but it's there. Anyway, and so sometimes as the name changes, I think it's part of the how people name themselves. It's part of the awakening, part of the oppression. So, maybe that's true of all. Gonna be true of all of us at some level. Anyway, we're gonna wander into some turbulent water here in a few minutes. I'm gonna plug in a slightly different musical outlook here. Anyway, so I'm going to switch over from Coltrane to Miles on the rotation after the regular program. We have later in the about 9 o'clock, James Boyd with Recovery Radio is coming in, and he's sort of, we're getting, that's working out, I think. It's going to start working out. It takes a while to get the website thing rolling with internet radio. I guess I should turn on that little dude there. if I want to play stuff. And so we're going to open up the show here this morning. Let's see here. I got to get the right program up. And we're going to open up with a some Hornsby. I haven't played Hornsby in a while, and I don't know. This stuff is, it doesn't leave you, you know. It's I mean, you play it for a while and you go, okay, you've done some Bruce, but then you come back to it because he's just got such a, he's got so much soul in his fingertips, especially when he's touching those keyboards. Let's see what we got here. Where are we going to start? That's the question. We're going to have to... well, my little thing is, you know, running slow this morning, and so I gotta get down here and find Bruce. H-I... I guess it's going to be under the first name, isn't it? Well, there we go. All right. And, well, we have lots of different ways I have this categorized, and that's, you know, probably trouble. Here we go. I know it's a little annoying what's happening here, but we're gonna get it out of here somehow. There we go. Hi, welcome to the Winners and Losers radio program, also known as the Moose Turd Cafe. Now you have a little slice of pie. Nothing worse will happen the rest of the day. It'll be all sunshine. There's going to be some changes made. You've got to trust me about this.
Knife expert, kind of a Jim Bowie type, swaggering, blustering, coonskin. I said, you're not serious, right? Then I saw him grab my friend by the hair. I guess I should have prayed. As it dragged him around, I said to myself, there's gonna be some changes made.
Gonna be some changes made.
From afar, with a finger to her lips, she led me out to see the stars. She led me down to the grinning lake, and in it we did wait. She took my hand and put it there. Gonna be some changes made. Some changes made. I can't keep on doing what I've been doing these days. Better figure out something. Things are looking great. There gonna be some changes, changes, changes made. Up in front for all to see, and graceful like a bumbling fool. Then I thought I felt slip from my mouth a little drool. Maybe no one noticed it, on my mind heavily it weighed. I saw two people snickering, I said there needs to be some changes made. I'm snickering.
Gonna be a snickering,
gonna be some changes made. Snickering.
Changes made. Gonna be some changes made. Gonna be some changes made.
Changes made.
Gonna be some changes made.
Home.
up and saw my little name. Going well, it feels a green and I can do my macrame. A buffoon fumbling without a clue likes to shift the blame and often feels betrayed. There's gonna be some changes made. There's gonna be some changes made.
Gonna be some changes, changes made. Can't keep on doing what I've been doing these days. Look in the mirror, see clouds' faces. Gonna be some changes made. Gonna be some changes, changes made. Can't keep on doing what I've been doing these days. Look in the mirror, see clouds' faces. Gotta take it all, gotta get myself straight.
Yeah, well, okay, so there's going to be some changes made, pal. Put your hand in the Granite Lake. Yeah. The sheep in wolf's clothing. Now, we're going to have a little Thurber moment on a number of these mornings here, because I think it's good to step back occasionally and, you know, take a look at what you're, are you covering the ground you're standing on? And Thurber, great writer, humorist, used to write little parables and morals for the New Yorker magazine, and others as well. And plus, as author of a number of plays, and long gone now, but you know, kind of out there, you know, for the 50s and 60s when I was growing up. And we're going to be doing more parables here. I know the past, you know, 6-8 months, it's been a lot of ranting, you know, eating shit in the diner. It's just been every morning, you know, open the newspaper and, oh my God, your sandwich turns to something unpalatable prepared by Dr. Lecter, Hannibal Lecter. And the worst people in the world, you know, just barge in and want to talk to you on your breakfast, you know. Governor Jim Injustice, you know, tub of lard. I hear he was up at Spring Mills. I didn't go. You know, we had shows to produce. Yeah, we got somebody calling in here. What's happening, man?
Good morning, Mr. Case.
You're fired.
Good morning, Mr. Case.
Good morning, Dr. Lecter. I'm glad that I know it's dangerous to fire you because you might have me for dinner, but anyway, good morning, pal.
I've been preparing various delectable desires that will not be found on the food network.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm concerned. Are you? Did you call in? Did you want to hear the sheep in wolf's clothing?
I don't know what happened, John. I was dialing the phone one moment. And good morning, John.
Good morning. Good morning. Hey, I want you to listen to this parable. There's a lesson in it. I you know, it's just an accident, but I think actually it's aimed at you and me.
Mm.
Directly. Okay. You know, it goes, not long ago, there were two sheep who put on wolf's clothing and went among the wolves as spies to see what was going on. They arrived on a fete day when all the wolves were singing in the taverns and dancing in the street. The first sheep said to his companion, "You know, wolves are just like us, for they gamble and frisk. Every day is fete day in Wolfland." He made some notes on a piece of paper, which a spy, of course, should never do. And he headed them and titled them, "My 24 Hours in Wolfland." For he had decided not to be a spy any longer, but to write a book on Wolfland and also some articles in the Sheep's Home Companion. The other sheep guessed what he was planning to do, so he slipped away and began to write a book called "My 10 Hours in Wolfland." The first sheep suspected what was up when he found his friend was gone, so he wired a book to his publisher called My 5 Hours in Wolfland. The other sheep immediately sold his manuscript to a newspaper syndicate for serialization. Both sheep gave the same message to their fellows. Wolves were just like sheep, for they gambled and partied. Every day was a party day in Wolfland. And the citizens of Sheepland were convinced by all this, so they drew in their sentinels and let down their barriers. And when the wolves descended on them one night, howling and slavering, the sheep were as easy to kill and eat as flies on a window pane. Don't get it right. Just get it written. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, Jeff.
So here we are, spies in Wolfland.
I don't know about that.
We're about to be swatted.
No. I'm diligently working on my rehabilitation. And, physically feeling better. Not all the time. Some days are bad. But mostly good.
That's good. How you doing with...
Having an opportunity to go back out and perform some stand-up.
Yeah, now what's your schedule now? Did you just do one? Or?
No, I did... I went back in the place you saw me at, Frederick, this past Sunday night.
How'd that go?
It was good. Sometimes these things are dictated from the energy of the crowd, and the crowd was a little docile, but they enjoyed it. And there's some perspective that I simply must adopt, in order for me to move forward. I have a bit of a different perspective than a lot of other comedians. I'm alive.
There you go. As opposed to being dead.
It changes things.
Yeah, man, does it change things. The borderlands between life and death.
You're feeling pretty pretty blessed that you're, still here and able to perform. And that was good. I mean, I talked more about the incident that day. As things have moved along, I've been able to track my memory back to what happened and how frightening it was, but also how incredible the paramedics were and how amazing my wife was.
Well, okay.
Just some anecdotal stuff that was kind of funny. like when the guy says, you need to try to stand up and squeeze my hands.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, in that moment, you're a little bit clinging,
Sure.
Life.
Yeah, right, man.
And I did what he told me to do.
Yeah.
And I just kind of fast forward. I'm laying on my back in the ambulance, and a young lady named Stephanie, who I will be eternally grateful for, asked him, well, how'd he do? And the guy who was unfortunately driving the ambulance is
uh-oh.
Who I squeezed. His hand.
Did you crush his hand, break his bone?
Yeah, he said that guy almost broke my effing hand. And Stephanie said, well, it's a good thing he's not 100%.
Well, there you go.
So that was that part of it. So there is some, a little bit of humor to be found in it, but it's also, I think, what I've seen, too, is kind of a little bit of a... some good quality stand-up by young people, which is different than
I think humor is like built into us now, isn't it, somehow?
Right. I guess my point is it's better than it's been in a while.
Well, that's good.
My point is that it's just it's pretty doggone good.
So the teachers are still on strike in Jefferson County. We could do a little Jefferson County
sure
news.
Yeah, sure are, and I swung by. My wife and I had a chance to swing by as we were
yeah.
running various errands and getting some things done. We were able to stop in and honk the horn and show our support earlier in the,
right.
in the day.
Right. Well, I told you I was over at Bradley's, and
yeah, you did.
It's a fantastic story of my wife's good friend, and she's quite a character. I don't know whether you've ever met her or not. Her name is Chris Trahern. She was she reached the level of commander in a career in the Navy, and was a stationed in Okinawa for quite a while. And there on the beaches, she found shards of plateware and pottery, you know, some of it quite old, and found out that it had been, the shards were there because at the end of World War II, after Hiroshima, when the invasion of Japan was inevitable, many of the women, smashed their heirloom pottery and placeware and stuff like that on the beaches, because they would rather destroy it than allow it to be stolen by, quote, barbarians, end quote. And so our Carol's friend was gathered up, a couple of, rain barrels, frankly, of these shards. And but it's sitting around, and gave Carol some of them. And I showed them to Bradley. Bradley Sanders, a local artist here in Jefferson County. And the narrative behind it is just so powerful, right? What you're holding in your hands.
A very good man, too.
And he just...
And just describing Bradley as an artist is... I would say that he's a little bit more. I think he's a stalwart in the community.
He's kind of a Buddha character, a little bit.
Yeah, he's
he'll love that when he's
his wisdom is grand.
Anyway, so he put together and formed these shards into kind of a sea scene on a table, on a big, fairly good sized table. I don't know about. What, 8, maybe 2 feet by 4 feet kind of thing, something like that. And form the shards into these different kinds of sea creatures that are like swimming and then using the various pieces, because some of the artwork on the pottery is really unusual. It's you can tell some of it's very old and very intricate, right? And others mm-hmm. is... But anyway... and he's really turned it into a masterpiece, and he's going to put it on some kind of Shinto holding thing. I don't know. Yeah. I feel like I'm talking to Carl Jung sometimes when I'm talking to Bradley. But anyway, we're into the very serious abstractions there at some level. But
I'm a big fan of his on he posts some things online that make a lot of sense.
Oh yeah, he's a good guy. I mean, we're talking, I think we're talking serious stuff here, it's good.
Right. And not only that, I mean, I've seen some pictures displayed of other work that he's done, and it's just, it's awe-inspiring to see some of the things that he is capable of.
They did a lot of museum work over the years, and cool stuff, great team. And there's some people around that that have been trained by him, that are also very good. He had that forge over there. Some of the ironwork you see around here, I think a number of people have been basically sort of apprenticed for a while to Bradley, and learned how to do forge work and servos and all kinds of different kinds of things that he's done. So
pretty amazing, sir.
And so the boys are okay over there. The farm is producing. I saw the biggest turkeys I've seen in a while, man, and they were chasing me. Speaking of turkeys chasing us,
I don't think they take well to you, John.
No. No, that's true. By the way, it learned to the Liberty, excuse me.
Kind of gleam in your eye that they're concerned.
Yes, I know. The Liberty League in Jefferson County, which is the group of the ultra-right, you know, householder faction, are targeting Jane Tabb, who's going to be up for re-election, you know, and they're trying to destroy her, you know, basically the way they tried to destroy Walt Pelosi. Because you had a couple of Republicans, you know, but they were practical about county business and responsible. And now you have these fruitcakes. They have to be defeated, you know. Somehow we got to get it together to...
You can't just have a, you know, there's no more logical application. You have to be able to... you have to be able to pull out some kind of ridiculous narrative out of your butt and, you know... talk about that. There doesn't seem to be any kind of consistent message. It's just, it seems as if, I mean, if you, from CPAC to just about everything else, there's really, it's...
Oh, I mean, that CPAC,
woman,
oh, God, yeah.
There was a woman at CPAC who basically challenged their support of someone like Roy Moore.
Yeah, you can't. Well, Roy.
And she was escorted out.
That's right. Yeah, I know. I was reading
for
that.
For her own protection, she left. She had to leave her coat there. For God's sake, this is where we're at.
I know. Oh well, that's where some of them, right? Yeah.
Human society. This is where we're at.
So, hold on.
At the very least,
Mike,
you had that opportunity. And she did get a chance to speak, so I will say that, you know, she did speak. To
I mean, that
people.
Place should be burnt down.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sorry. You know, I'm ready for a regime. You know, this is the Bolshevik in me. Okay, that you know, there's a time that comes when you have to get past this, and the way to get past this is to repress it.
Wow, I just thought of a really. Horrible song parody.
What?
Do everything burn, burn, there is a season.
Some things.
Burn.
Why do you think God wants a burnt offering? Huh? Hey, think about that.
It's awful. Yeah, yeah, and certainly, I don't know, when you see these... brilliant young people, because I hesitate to call them children, simply because of just how bright and knowledgeable and like incredibly professional they were in their speaking, and being attacked consistently.
It's scum.
A right-wing media machine. That I got news for it. It was kind of funny because the one young man said it's just a shame because they don't believe in their country anymore, and I still believe in America. And you can keep attacking us, but guess what? We're going to outlive you.
I like that line.
I was like, wow, that is.
I like that line.
Yeah, yeah. It was
we're going to outlive you. I think that's a good one.
I mean, I don't. Everyone from and the young lady Emma, who I think is just wow, just inspiring. She has got a story to tell, and she's not going to allow you or anybody else to, you know, get in her way. You know, and as far as she's concerned, as far as the rest of those young people are concerned, guess what, pal? You're in her way. I said, you know, to a friend. Who has a national radio show, I said, apparently we all sat back for a while, unfortunately, and looked for the adult in the room. And she's 17 years old, she knows what she's talking about, and she's pissed. So, I would be, you know, I'm warning them, but someone should.
No,
I can
I hear
tell
you
that because this is not, in many ways, immediately, not immediately, about a day and a half after this god-awful incident, was another AR-15. My wife turned to me and she said very specifically, this feels very different. This feels as if we may be at a pivotal moment of some type of revolution in terms of young people. I don't know what to call them. call millennials, but millennials are all now trying to be professionals.
Oh, I think the Trump phenomenon has sparked a deep reaction, and I think the initial one was the Women's March, okay, that was kind of a national reflection of. But you're seeing it now in a lot of different dimensions, and young people are turning, unless they're captured into one of these religious or bullshit things, right? They're turning away from it, and they're turning away, and you know, and when you're young and you are get. You know, offended. I remember this happened in the 60s, right? I mean, the combination of the war and the civil rights thing, it just blew a trigger. And the assassinations, okay? Just pulled a trigger, you know, on people. And wherever you were at, I mean, depending on, you know, for example, are you about to be drafted? You know, that kind of thing, right? And, you know, people react in different ways that change for the rest of their life. And, you know, in a space of 6 months, you go through changes that you might not go through in another 20 years.
Well, yeah, and you have card-carrying members of the NRA going on producing their own video, taking their own personal AR-15 weapon out of circulation with a saw.
Well, I mean, I think that's a good thing.
A man in New York who's a hunter who, you know, doesn't support nonsense and essentially is for the, you know, the basics of background checks, disarming mentally ill people, challenging whether or not you can get a weapon
right.
If you're mentally, you know, if there's domestic violence in your past. You know, we're not talking about, the sad part is we're not talking about removing weapons. Now, some people are. There's now a call to say, you know what, we need to reinstitute the assault ban.
Yeah, I know.
The ban on assault weapons.
Well.
Get rid of it. Or I'm sorry, not get rid of it. Bring it back. We need to bring it back whole cloth. And there's some discussion about that. I don't know what's going to happen. I know that, you know, Rick Scott was scheduled to speak at the NRA convention. And then, of course, you have Dana Loesch and Wayne LaPierre villain.
LaPierre. LaPierre.
Yeah.
It sounds like one of those cartoons, you know, with LaPierre.
There's a record of him applying for something and he couldn't get it because he had some kind of mental issues.
LaPierre?
Yeah, let's just let that stay there in the air for a second.
Okay, he has some kind of mental issues, right? It turns out LaPierre shows up at, you know, some liberal convention with an AR-15.
Yeah, well, you know, those weapons are.
Now I want to, as you know,
there's also too, John. There was a report by one of the hospital workers who is technician/doctor who posted a descriptive narrative of what he saw in some of the scans. And let me tell you, you cannot read it without almost
throwing up.
Don't eat before you read it. It's just, there's a horror that is just, it's hard to read.
No, I know. By the way, have you been following?
I read
Mike.
One paragraph, and I just began to bawl.
You've been following the narrative behind this Trump calling these sheriffs cowards.
Yeah.
There's something that stinks. The thing stinks.
Well, now the lawyer for the deputy who was on duty says that the deputy himself followed all of the rules in terms of what he was taught for his training, and his response to all of this was that he thought that the weapon was outside. That's why he didn't enter the school.
Yeah, I read that. But I think even before then, you know, the fact that Trump decides to call, you know, as part of his gaslighting thing about this lunacy about arm the teachers and students, okay? And then he says, that the other guy was a coward, you know, and I would...
My brother weighed in on that with me this morning. You know, I go in there with... I like to think it was out of weapon, you know?
Yeah, right.
I told my brother he'd trip over his bone spurs running in the opposite direction.
But see, I think there's a bad thing about this because this business about you can't trust the local elected. By the way, sheriffs are elected. Okay. Civilian authorities. You know, because they are not armed militias. You know, that are, you know, running around just blowing people away.
This is more authoritarianism.
That's what I think. That's part of what's going on. That's undermined civilian authorities, you know, even among civilian police authorities, you know, and let's militarize them, you know, turn them into gangs, you know, the SS or whatever, you know, the brown shirts.
Yeah.
We'll enforce things with that.
You actually see incidents like that. Reminiscent of that with the ICE agents.
Yes, that's right.
You know, you continue to see that everywhere, and that's you know, people aren't, you know, and it just seems to be such a game of distraction, deflection, and denial, constantly, and they have him, you know, say three or four really stupid, off the wall things that everybody chases. And they chase what he says, and then they chase what he tweets. And it becomes, like you
right.
said on many occasions, we're all running around in circles chasing our own tail.
Yeah, look here, not there, look here.
You know, yeah, exactly. Look over here.
Yeah, you know.
look over here, you know. And John, let me say, I appreciate this forum for what it is. I apologize that I'm not going to be able to commit to it the way I did, but I will continue, if it's okay with you, to time to time. It is crucial that I work very hard and diligently on my own physical rehabilitation.
I know, buddy. You know,
so that's kind of where I'm at, just in case anybody was wondering.
All right, buddy.
They haven't heard our governor on the air in a while.
Nah, that's okay. You know, we can. I got a few more things to do on the program. Let me move on and let you get back to your workout. Okay.
And thank you again, and we'll talk soon.
All right, buddy. Take care, man.
Okay,
yeah. Thanks,
bye.
Man. Yeah. Bye. Mike Diesel. You know, the man. All right, we're back here on the Moose Turd Cafe, taking it all in, and the way that we might. We're going to do a little bit more of Bruce Hornsby. This is called The Valley Road, one of my favorites. If I can get the volume up.
Me to go. Said sisters. Everybody knew what they were talking about.
Here. That was the Valley Road with Bruce Hornsby, one of my favorites of his old stuff. I guess it's old now. Everything gets old. Well, that's not true. Some things, you know, perish young. All right, we're going to move on to our little economics part of the program here. News and economics. We had a Every time Mike calls in, we do a little bit of ranting, but we're going to change tone slightly, you know, just slightly. I've been running a listserv, another blog actually called Socialist Economics for a number of years. And what it really is just an aggregation of articles, economic articles that are, I would say, you know, I sort of position it toward the semi-literate in economics. And now I've read a lot of economics, and I do not. My wife's a professional economist, and she sort of trained me. But I was always interested in economics more from a practical point of view when I was active as a representative in the labor movement. And because bargaining with companies and, you know, having the only tool in your pocket, really, is just to test whether or not anything the company was telling you was true at the time was, you know, you have to set a little fire under their ass, okay, and start a little motion going in the plant or shop or workplace. And, you know, raise these questions that people have, they're muttering about, and raise them, and then see what happens when the management thinks, oh my God, we have a labor problem. Then sometimes they tell you, you know, you get more a clearer idea of what's really happening, because there's a tendency of management to obfuscate their employees about many matters, and to, you know, have them not think about, you know, combining and bargaining with you. So, but anyway, but we're always looking for tools, and we did not have and I remember in the staffs of the union I worked for anyway, you know, we had no real access to professional economists other than those that you could read about in the Economic Policy Institute, which was a new thing. And we actually didn't, I don't remember we had it, access to it in quite the same way when we were in the 70s. I think they were starting then, but it was not as big a service as it is now. And of course, nobody was online, so you actually had to subscribe and wait for the monthly newsletter to get to you. You know, you're still 20 years away from, you know, everybody having websites. So it was, you know, we were uninformed. And then about the time in the 90s when I was working in the high-tech industry and got interested in the in a lot of aspects of finance, because we were working in startups and you had to go borrow money or get investors to get your companies working. And that was a big part of, you know, how you paid the bills, at least for the first 3 years of your startup. And of course, a lot of startups didn't work, but we had a workforce that kind of moved on from one to another, and a network of people. I worked for almost 20 years in that industry, and I think I filled out maybe one or two applications, but I never had to. Everything was obtained through networking. Everyone, every job, you know. So, and gigs and jobs and, you know, stuff tend to move pretty fast in the tech industry, faster than in older industries anyway. So we would, you know, you need to learn about that environment. Anyway, so when my wife became a PhD economist, and, then I, of course, my old tactics of the union organizer started to fail, which was, you know, a little bit of, push, and then wait and see what falls apart. You know, you had to approach it a little more scientifically, so I had to become educated. And so part of my education is publishing this Listserv of Socialist Economics. You can find it at Google. It's, Google, or put in your search engine Socialist Economics Google Groups, and it'll come right up. And I also have economics.enlightenedradio.org is the other site where I aggregate. Where I basically, anything that I email out on the list, I also post on that blog. And most of it is articles by leading economists or policy things, related to socialist economics. Now, what is, you're going to ask, what someone's going to ask what socialist economics is, and I'm not going to answer it right now. I'm going to let the articles speak for themselves, because I think, the alternatives to or the counterweights to market-oriented transactions, which is most transactions now, it's a profoundly important question, because it has to do with, what is possible to change. If the changes you propose can't be sustained by an economy, and of course, if you produce certain things in abundance and cheaply, well, then, okay, whatever that part is you don't need an economy for. Okay, but that's not, everybody, we're not there yet, where you're born with a lifetime of food, shelter, and clothing. That's not, part of the initial birth package there. Maybe it'll come to that someday. If you become productive enough, I suppose, at some level you can do that. And that would be an interesting thing, because now you would have, you know, a whole section of an economy that was engaged probably mostly in services or crafts or arts. And that's not clear, you know, how much of that transaction has to be cash. Cash is basically, when everything you're using cash for, that's a commodity. But it's not clear that, you know, that all goods are transacted that way. For example, in software, for example, take the whole open source community and development. Even though there are corporations that are involved in helping subsidize those efforts and the engineering efforts, nonetheless, I mean, the software is traded for free. So, and it's deployed and used in various infrastructure and programming frameworks across the world. Probably is, I don't know what the exact proportion, but I know on web servers that it's at least half of the web server market is open source software or community source software, not proprietary software. And I predict before the time is up that that Windows, which is a competing privately owned software solution in web service, just using that as an example, they will eventually make those server products free too, and focused on making money on services and something else. It's an interesting phenomenon that's taking place before us, where we have so much that's being produced that is, if you think about it, is intangible. It's not a hammer, can't touch it. It's digital, soft, you know, it's virtual. We have a lot of words, right, that we use for the thing. It's something that we are into. We pay money for it. We spend a lot of time interacting with this virtual world. Many of us do, anyway. I do. And yet, is it real or is it Memorex? I mean, and when we're doing that, okay, it's a different kind of transaction than a different kind of commodity. It's not really a very good commodity. You know, software is easy to copy, easy to steal, easy to reverse engineer. It's leaky. It's not a good store of value. You know, if you buy a hammer, I'm sorry, and the hammer, it can't be copied except by making another hammer. So you know, it's not a free copy. And plus, its value does not reside. It resides somewhere besides in your mind, as an idea, or as a conception, or as a perception. As a picture, as a photograph. A photograph that you don't have to have a, you know, physical photograph folder for. As a matter of fact, it doesn't have to reside anywhere near you. You know, the photo you're looking at on your Google or your Amazon or some other cloud-based configuration, that server could be any, could be a lot of places. Just with that remarks, we'll do our little review this morning of the economic news. Yesterday, I played an excerpt from Richard Wolff's Economic Update. I think he's an interesting guy, and we'll be doing some other remarks similar to that as I sort of come upon them. Get the top news here. Well, I think the top news in economics really has been recently the instability in the stock market and China. I want to pick those sort of two touchstones here as a way to give you something to think about here today. Recently, China has been going through some extraordinary political changes. The new president and general secretary of their Communist Party, Xi Jinping. I hope I'm blowing that. Probably, I apologize. Has ascended as a single voice with a global perspective. And if you read his stuff, seductive in its intelligence, okay, analysis of the main trends going on in the world and which ones are going forward and which ones are not. And there's a lot, and then of course there's quite a bit of it. I've just been reading him. I find his thought interesting, and not just a rehash, not just a formulaic. Okay, so I encourage people to, you know, check out, you know, when you have a leader who is literate. Barack Obama was a literate person. And when he spoke in complete sentences and paragraphs, and, you know, he articulated, he was capable of articulating nuance in policy without, turning it into just a bunch of phrases, which is hard to do in politics. It's very, very difficult to make something comprehensible to everybody. But still meaningful and not just a slogan. Okay, that's a difficult art, you know, to try and communicate substance, even though you're going to be relying upon something that is phrases that at times are close to slogans, or that have a, because you know the idea is you want to have people remember it if possible. So on the China front, the other extraordinary thing, of course, is that the Chinese, regardless of what you want to think about their political system or their leadership, are committed to science. They are committed to science, and they believe in it, and they have invested a large amount of resources in it, especially in some critical areas, computer science and bioengineering and various energy, solar. I mean, they have a concentrated and now significant engineering and scientific leadership. Now, that's at the same time as we have our current reality TV jackass president. I'm sorry, I got to keep my partisanship. That's as calm as I can be about it. Pursuing an anti-scientific, flirting with every stupid ideology in the world, okay? And promoting the most backward and infantile and just diversive. Actually, it's just diversive and divisive. You know, I want to divert you from what I'm doing, which is doing things for billionaires. And I'm going to play with your mind, you know, by, tweaking you every single day about something that will make the, especially the progressive and liberal and things go nuts and get them all fighting with each other and get all your enemies fighting with each other and intimidate, right? I mean, it's the kind of bargaining that... really, you need to take the guy and slap him 5 or 6 times and go sit down at the table and now we'll listen to each other. Well, it was Trump, he'd probably have to get up and, you know, take a bathroom break. But in any event, the Chinese have moved way ahead, okay, at least. And they're, and the other problem is that now, a shift because of Trump's immigration rhetoric and policies and threats and intimidation and the act of their little SS troops, the ICE team, you know, just picking up anybody that ain't white and asking them for their IDs. And if you haven't got it, bye, disappear. Take, you know, 5 lawyers to find you. You know, if you can afford them. Yeah, see, you know. The problem now is that the immigration has impacted the amount of PhD research candidates and graduates, 40% of whom are from other countries in the United States, taking advantage of our university system and becoming advanced degrees. 40%. China being a big number of those. And now those folks are not going to, you know, it works out okay if they come in and they get that advanced degree in engineering and then they go to work in the United States. But that's not, that's, and that's still happening. You know, however, it's declining. And it's now threatened to turn into a wholesale reversal. People are going back to China, to India, okay, to, and I don't know whether they're going back to Russia or not, you know, but Russia also has a first-class educational system. That it can, you know, so now you have a whole bunch of the world taking the leadership in the scientific thing, and now you have a problem where we do not have enough native graduates in engineering and science to perform the work that it takes to remain competitive in engineering and science. And what does that impact most of all? Well, as much as anything, the military. If you don't have the best hardware, and how are you going to have the best drones? What happens if somebody had better drones? Okay? I mean, think about it. Oh, our drones, you know, well, we mastered machine learning and AI at a new level, and our drones can swarm and do all these things by themselves. you think you'd be attacked by a bunch of a billion bees. So now there's a crisis, and the military apparently has stepped in and resisted and told Trump, no, he can't cut back the investments, and he may have to do something about immigration. Okay, so, and of course, Trump is having a temper tantrum, but we'll see who's the boss. So that's one thing. The Chinese initiatives in science are having an impact and are now a major roadblock in the anti-science agenda of the administration. And that's partially been assisted by recent reports coming out of the National Science Foundation and others that have been documenting China's initiatives. One of the initiatives China has taken is to buy the state of West Virginia, by the way, something we'll talk about in more detail later. As soon as our invisible governor, although Governor Justice did appear at Spring Mills yesterday, as soon as our invisible governor decides to release the details of the memorandum of understanding whereby China Energy is going to invest $83.7 billion in West Virginia, a state whose annual GDP is down around 60-something, and may mainly interested in gas and chemical development. So we're waiting to see what, you know, that's the shoe's going to drop on that. And in the meantime, we're in the midst of a very serious conflict with public employees, especially teachers, over funding their insurance plan and giving them a raise so they don't have to immediately leave the state to be able to send their kid to college. All right. But now I'm back to the volatility question. You know, you're seeing in effect that you know, the market can't decide whether they should put their money in bonds, which should be safer but lower interest, okay, or in stocks, which, you know, is it still going to grow? I mean, there's a lot of nerves that are being frayed by the fact that the current growth cycle, starting with Obama's stimulus package, basically, is in its eighth or ninth year now. Okay, so 2009 to 17, 18. So eighth year, and eventually it's going down. And the problem with it going down is you already have interest rates at a very, very low level. They are going up a little bit now. The Fed's trying to get them up, partly to have some room in case the economy heads south again, which it looks like it's getting ready to do. All right. Now, you know, there's a couple of things that are going to affect that. The tax cuts are going to have an impact one way or the other. It's not clear entirely whether that's going to have the stimulus, whether further stimulus, because it's going to act as a stimulus to the economy. People, you would think, would invest some of that money. The billionaires that they're going to receive from the tax cuts. So there should be a bump, but the problem is the labor market is pretty much filled up at it's right near 4%, maybe even going to go under 4%. And if that happens, then it's hard to expand, especially when you're throwing the immigrants out too. That's one source of expansion, to increase your population by bringing in immigration. But if you don't do that, and you're not paying anybody, all the money is going to the top 1%, how much more expansion can you get? You mainly get more production when you got more workers, and you get more consumption when you got more consumers. And when the consumers have the power to consume. So anyway, the nervousness is, should I put my money in bonds or stocks? I mean, is it a bubble? Yeah, they know it's a bubble, but there's the famous expression called the greatest fool, a theory whereby, you know, there's always a bigger fool than you. You're going to go ahead and you see your stocks are going up. And you're going to follow it, and then maybe you'll take the advice of somebody who claims to have a formula and a rig and a game and a this and a that with it. Okay. At some point, there's going to be some externality that's going to whack the market that you didn't see, and it's going to go to hell, all right, for a while. And, you know, anybody that doesn't have very deep pockets and is probably not going to make it. That's the problem you have. But anyway, problem is you get much better growth in the stock market in value over the long run, and than you do in bonds. Okay, so a difference of 4 or 5, sometimes 8% in earnings differences. So that's why you have people wondering, okay, are we at the tipping point, or are we not? And it doesn't take much news coming in from around the world to, tip it one way or the other when it's kind of in a fragile place. And so that's basically what's happening, and I'm summarizing some of the arguments here of Paul Krugman and Larry Summers in recent articles. That you can check them out on our Socialist Economics website, economics.enlightenradio.org. And that's going to be our report today for the Moose Turd Cafe. And I thank you guys for tuning in, and we'll be podcasting it as soon as we get off the air here. Thanks very much. Well, I guess we'll close with Bruce Hornsby tune here. And I got to find the one I want to play. He's another guy that has a difficult time playing the same song the same way twice. Here we go. Take care, everybody. It's late, but everything comes next.
There was a man of confused and sad nature. Thought no one loved him, that was not true. Said he was a lost soul, didn't fit in anywhere. And nowhere to turn. As Dear Mary, do you remember the day when we went walking downtown? As I recall, was an early December. After school, I just fell out. When I see you on the street in the twilight, I may tip my head and keep my head down. Show me love, but maybe I don't deserve it. I've been called, but not been found. But I'm a lost soul coming down the road, somewhere between.